Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 762, who is running this country anyway? We're going to talk about it and where I got the idea for this podcast from a new show that I'm watching called Designated Survivor. It's actually not a new show, but it's new on Netflix, and it's not the greatest show, but there is a lot of terrible popular political philosophy sprinkled in every episode, furthering misconceptions and confusion about what our government is and what the United States is. And, you know, I decided I got to talk about it, so we're going to do that in podcast 762. Well, before I start, I got to tell you that I'm working with a new company. It is a payment processor, and I'm excited about this company, ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. So if you do a business, if you have a business and you do business, listen up, because this message is for you. Because business people have problems getting paid. Clients want to pay with, they want to pay with credit cards. They want to pay online. They want the payments to be easy, and you need a good payment processor to do that. So you have clients saying, hey, do you take credit cards? Then a lot of businesses won't take credit cards over electronic means because they're expensive. So ReliaFund helps you with that. They are a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. I always tell you about that. Basically, they've been in business for 20 years doing this. So they are part of the payment processing revolution that is going on in this country. They know the business. They know it upside down. And they also want me to ask developers. So if you're one of these people who develop websites for your clients that involve e-commerce solutions, then you should talk to ReliaFund, because you'll deal with an actual human being. And of course, business people should also do the same thing. No long-term contracts. It's secure. They're technology-focused. 866-243-5040. 866-243-5040. You talk to Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. Check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. Or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com that says ReliaFund. Takes you to their contact page, and you can fill that out. That's how I found them. I have a ReliaFund button on my website, so check them out online, ReliaFund.com. Well, one of the things I'm going to talk about in this podcast is government. And government, and in particular tariffs, are creating all kinds of issues on a day-to-day basis. Now, companies have to deal with that. And a lot of companies, in order to deal with it, have brought some of their manufacturing back into the United States, either in-house or they're looking for U.S. manufacturers. If this is you, consider American Manufacturing by DepoStar. Design, engineering, and manufacturing. They do a great job. D-E-P-O-T, DepoStar at DepoStar.com. Yeah, who's running this country anyway? The show Designated Survivor comes up in every show. Somebody somewhere in the show says, who's running this country anyway? Or so-and-so is running the country. And the show Designated Survivor is a simple idea that, God forbid, terrorists would blow up the Capitol building in Washington during a State of the Union address and kill all the top elected officials. Somehow this act of terror brings us the greatest president ever, who is the designated survivor. Every time they do a State of the Union, they have one guy from the cabinet who is the designated survivor, apparently, in case of this terrible thing that would happen. And so in the show, an unassuming, careful, and analytic Jack Bauer becomes president. He's really not Jack Bauer, but his name is Kirkland or something. Heir to the Costco fortune, I don't know. But it's Kiefer Sullivan. And as I said, in every episode, somebody blurts out, who's running this country? And I hear that a lot. I hear it from people in all walks of life. And I think it tells us a lot about what is wrong with our politics today, and by extension, our country and our government. And I have been struggling lately to try to advance the story, so to speak, or talk about something that is not Brett Kavanaugh and is not this lurid, horrible, awful political coverage that goes on in this country. And so I just refuse to do it. I did a Brett Kavanaugh podcast. If you want to listen to it, great. I'm not doing another one. So I decided that I want to talk about something new, and I want to try to move things forward a little bit, or at least give subscribers and listeners something to think about besides the usual crap. And that's what it is. The truth is, no one is running the country, so to speak. We actually run the country, the citizens, by doing all the things that we do. The executive branch runs the actual government. And when the government didn't do very much, it was a relatively, political and you could say boring job. Today, the government, federal and state governments, have pushed themselves into almost every corner of our lives. Both parties have done it and continue to do it. And, the idea that we would be without a president or a federal government. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? There's no federal government. Well, we all live under a state government, and we all live under a county government, and we all live under a county sheriff, and, we have the rule of law, and so the country would survive if the federal government was completely destroyed plenty of time long enough. And, of course, you can't do a TV show on that. And what they want to do with Designated Survivor is turn it into West Wing, which is kind of funny. So we are having a national debate right now over a Supreme Court nominee, primarily because he supposedly favors overturning the famous so-called pro-abortion Roe v. Wade ruling. Now, we don't talk very much about that same Supreme Court nominee's views on privacy or enhanced interrogation, or more specifically, executive power. We don't talk about that, do we? So they, as in government, doesn't run the country because they don't run us yet. But if they keep up like they are and we keep buying this sham nonsense that we are being shown by the media and by the people in charge of the government, they will run us. The philosophy that created our government was progressive. The Enlightenment was basically a progressive movement. The idea of democratic liberal movements in all of history, at least, in terms of our history, the history that matters to the United States, going back to classic times, the idea of democratic liberal movements in government and economy is, throughout history, to limit and control the power of the state. The Magna Carta limited and controlled the power of kings by the nobles, but it at least was something that was an effort to say, you as a king don't run us. We are partners in this effort, in this enterprise, and you will hear us. And, it was significant because it had never been done before. The Venetian councils sought to limit and control the power of kings, and chosen leaders served the councils. The United Provinces limited and controlled the power of the King of the Netherlands, who ruled in absentia. Then we come to the American Revolution. And by the way, I think it's important to point out that the Venetian government and the government of the United Provinces, which is the Netherlands, probably influenced our founders as much as classic, Roman and Greek history, as well as the idea of the British Parliament and the Prime Minister. So it's often forgotten how important the United Provinces were. It was the freest government in the world at the time. And so our leaders, the people that started this country, would have and did take a lot I wouldn't say license, but they were very well aware of what the United Provinces was all about at the time. So then the American Revolution, the creation of first the Articles of Confederation and then, the Constitution. First, the Revolution was about overthrowing the power of kings, especially the power of kings to tax. And then the creation of the American Representative Republic was about limiting and controlling power. That was the basis of the U.S. Constitution. It was the basis of the Bill of Rights. It was the basis of creating, a little bit stronger government than the Articles of Confederation. Now, I'm not trying to do a history of the Constitution here. There's other people that do that. I think that's a waste of time in general. I'm trying to show that the genesis of our political problem is that people don't understand the arguments anymore because our political journey hasn't taken us far enough to understand that both conservatism, which is supposed to be Republicans, and liberalism, which is supposed to be Democrats, ostensibly. I don't agree that it is, but okay. The idea that the Republicans and the Democrats actually increase the power of the state and limit the power of the individual. So it's exactly the reverse of what it should be. People are too busy, even if they study the Constitution, to look for arguments to learn these arguments, they are actually, when they study the Constitution or when they teach on the Constitution, they are looking to sell arguments that you can bring to bear in a one-sided argument. And then even that is a struggle when it comes to understanding those arguments. So if you want to put your local teacher on the Constitution up against constitutional scholars, they're going to be hard-pressed to actually understand the arguments that a scholar or an academic might make in some of these areas. So it ends up being an emotional, it ends up being an emotional argument and not a well-thought-out legal argument or a well-thought-out constitutional argument. So I say what it says means this, and they say what it says means that, and hilarity ensues. Both Republican and Democrat political movements at this time in this country are inherently state-oriented movements. So when I say they're the same thing, that's what I mean. And I want people to think about this because I think it's really, really important, because what we should be thinking about right now is what actually separates Republicans and Democrats. Each increased spending, each increased debt, each employ Keynesian economic policies, meaning, I'll explain that in a minute. Republicans spend to give taxpayers money back, but do not inherently reduce taxes. Republicans spend to stimulate growth in defense and other areas. Democrats spend on programs to solve social problems and grow constituencies. They borrow to stimulate the economy through public works programs, minimum incomes, regulation, public-private partnerships, and so on. But so do the Republicans. Democrats call themselves progressives, democratic socialists, liberals. Republicans call themselves, quote-unquote, conservatives. These days, primarily, what separates Republican from Democrat actually are religious issues and identity issues. Each party deepens differences by playing those chords on immigration, on abortion, on gays, on racial minorities, Christians against atheists, urban against rural, black and brown against white, rich against poor. Truth is, the solutions peddled by both use state power to coerce the other into accepting a red or a blue point of view. We're going to get a majority and we're going to fix this, which means everybody's going to have to go this way, and then the other guys get in and they're going to fix this and everything's going to change and we're going to go, quote unquote, the other way. Except we're not. We're moving in one direction with both of these political parties. Now, this isn't a complete list, but you get the idea. You can make your own list of what actually separates the two mainline parties. Is there a path forward that is unique presented by either of the two? And I would have to say no, because when it really comes down to it, what's the difference if government power is advanced for Republican ideals versus Democratic ideals if, in the end, government power is advanced? Neither one of them is Republican or Democrat. They are advancing government power. They are, I hate to use the term statist, but they're monolithic, statists. And so, for example, and I have to point this out because somebody brought this up. I saw it on Facebook about rich white men. And so I looked up Dianne Feinstein's age. She's 85 years old. She is the second richest senator in the Senate. And Richard Blumenthal, I think that's his name, who is one of the Democrats, is the richest of all. So the Democrats who are supposedly for the little guy actually are the richest. The top four or five senators in terms of wealth are all Democrats. And I think that's fascinating. In fact, when you look at the entire body, House and Senate, all of them, almost all of them are millionaires. If they aren't millionaires when they get in there, they become millionaires shortly thereafter. So you're dealing with people who are all Republican and Democrat, rich, and they play this little game where they pretend to be just regular old folks. And they're not. They are the elite, literally. And we have made them the elite because we have made the government more and more powerful. And as the government grows more powerful, we have to petition it to solve problems that it has created to solve problems. Government in public-private partnerships, rules and regulation, taxation, licensing, all of this creates entropy, which is in fact the opposite of their goal. They're trying to make things work, supposedly, but too much government creates a lack of order and a gradual decline into disorder, which is what entropy is. And because ultimately it is very difficult for governments to control or even regulate what 350 million or more Americans actually are doing every day. They can't possibly know our thoughts yet, and they can't possibly know everything we're doing yet, and they can't possibly know how we're building our businesses or anything else. So it becomes extremely difficult for them to control every single thing and to plan for every single outcome, even with advanced technology. Colder weather means that you turn your heat on. I finally turned the heat on September 30th. I finally had to. It was just too clammy in here. And so I turned the heat on. And of course it works because we put in a new furnace it wasn't a new furnace. It's a rebuilt furnace last winter because my heat went out on New Year's Eve 2018. And literally at the stroke of midnight, and I wasn't prepared for it. Why did it go out? Nobody bothered to check the heating before the season. So it seemed to work, but it was deteriorating throughout the fall. And then when it got cold, and if you recall on New Year's Day, it was 15 below, that's when it failed, of course. And this is what will happen to you if you don't check your heat. And that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business. Have them come out and check the furnace, look at the water heater, and check all these systems. Because these days, you know what's going to happen. It's going to blow when it's 15 below zero. And then when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems in the summer, well, you got to call somebody like Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And if it's a holiday, guess what? you know the answer to that question. So when you want reliable service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business for home or business. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Hey, I do a lot of printing. I have to because I read a lot of news and I like to read the news from paper. So I print. And I hate doing that because that means paying a ton of money for print cartridges. I have a laser printer. It's really, really expensive. And I hate the big box retailers that charge an arm and a leg for cartridges. Well, Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores on print cartridges, and they are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Free delivery on qualifying orders. They are in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. Ask for Jason. He's great. 763-420-6632. Look, there's a lot more to Cartridge World I could tell you about. Don't have time. 763-420-6632, Cartridge World, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Look for that really awesome yellow and black and white Cartridge World banner. So where did all this start? Aside from the Industrial Revolution, which is really kind of the timeline that we're on, so I look at the United States and I look at the early Republic, which was pretty much agrarian, and the early Republic, the business interests were usually land and shipping. And agriculture was either in the South, antebellum small farmers or plantations. And in the South, labor was based on slavery. That was the whole purpose of slavery, was free labor. And in the North, it was based on immigration. Labor came from immigrant groups. So the thing that really changed the country. So if you look at the country in terms of its development from 1776 all the way up through, 1846, it was about getting more land, and it was about immigration to a certain degree, and it was about the protection of the agrarian or the urban, and in this case, Boston and New York. The markets and the land guys and everything else. And it was about protecting the aristocracy, which is what created this country, right? And I'm not passing value judgment. I'm just saying that's kind of what it was. If you wanted to have a future, you piled everything into a wagon and you went west. And first people went to western, Virginia. And then they sort of started pushing into the Ohio River Valley. I'm often reminded of Cumberland, Maryland, which was at one point, I think it was the second or third largest city in the United States. If you ever get the chance and you're out east, go to Cumberland. It's really a cool place. That was one of the westernmost towns back in the day. And so people started to move west in search of land and getting away from, I guess you could say, the problems in the places that they started. So, and I could go on for hours about that. I'm not going to. That's part of the history that they teach us, basically manifest destiny, et cetera. So the Industrial Revolution began in this country in 1760, 1770s, 1780s, early 1800s, and in the United States, 1830s in the Pawtucket River Valley, when they started to build plants to weave. And they pulled people in off the farms and they started in industrial development. And of course, the Civil War was a big boon to industrial development in the North. And so the Industrial Revolution kind of was the cause of reform movements. And many of the problems that we have now started with something called radical progressivism in this country that kind of really gathered steam from about 1880 or so through the 1920s. Originally, progressivism was the idea of advancing society through reform, or the advocacy of an improvement of society through reform. Now, you do a simple search on progressivism itself as a philosophy is based on the idea, which seems perfectly reasonable, that science, technology, and economic development and social organization is vital to human development. As a political movement, it wanted to address the problems created by the Industrial Revolution in the United States and rejected the idea of survival of the fittest, basically, when it came to society. So we were supposed to intervene to help people, and progressives thought the best way to address things like racism. These are real problems, by the way, in the United States circa 1870, 1880, 1890. So racism, so-called corporate greed, class warfare, these, you know, were all problems. They thought the solution to these problems was providing a good education, safe environment, and an efficient workplace. Even today, I just knocked something over there. Even today, those things don't seem to be a big problem. In those days, Republicans were progressives, and so were Democrats. Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. Woodrow Wilson was a progressive. Even Calvin Coolidge incorporated progressive philosophy into their politics. Coolidge, especially as governor of Massachusetts, and later even as president. History books tell us the progressive era ended with World War I when a progressive president intervened in a foreign war nobody wanted. And while we won that war, the victory came at a great cost. And that was, of course, World War I. So to paraphrase some of this and to paraphrase the 538 blog, where they wrote about this at one point, there are basically two kinds of progressives. There's the first type of progressivism, which has its philosophical underpinnings in the 18th century, the Enlightenment, and it basically believes politics is a battle of ideas. Through the use of reason and the exchange of ideas, human society will tend to improve itself through scientific and technological innovation. So it believes in progress and for this reason lays claim to the term progressive. Now, you could call this rational progressivism because it relies on human faculties like reason. The second type of progressivism is what some call radical progressivism. This is a much more radical and comprehensive critique of the status quo, which is seen as corrupt. Radical progressivism's roots are in the 19th century, specifically the Industrial Revolution, and it owes a great deal to the Marxist critique of capitalism and the Marxist theory of social change. So-called radical progressivism finds inspiration with the 1960s left-wing radicals and the labor and social movements of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, from which it borrows the label progressive. So radical progressivism is not the same kind of progressivism as Teddy Roosevelt's progressivism or Calvin Coolidge's progressivism. It is more clearly distinguishable, really, from conventional liberalism and would generally be associated with the far left, although on a handful of issues such as free trade, it finds common cause with the so-called radical right. Now, today in the media, this is called populism, which I think all these terms really confuse people, and they really nobody knows what that is. So what I'm doing is I'm defining terms here, and I'm actually using the 538 blog at this point to define these terms, and I think these are good definitions. Radical progressivism embraces the tradition of populism and frequently adopts a discourse of the virtuous commoner organizing against the corrupt elite, right? It tends to view conservatism as immoral and contemporary American liberalism as amoral at best, and its project is really not reform, but transformation. So they want to transform. So radical progressives want to transform the American style of government. This is why I often say what they're trying to do is tack on a superstructure of quote-unquote democracy to a representative republic, which so if you look at a representative republic, we delegate our power to people that we choose. And representative republic, the Electoral College makes sense. But if you're a progressive and you're trying to tack on this broad democratic superstructure to a republic, you want to get rid of the Electoral College and you would favor the national popular vote. And so what's amusing to me is you have Republicans that believe that sort of thing for all sorts of silly political reasons. So what is the antidote here? And I'm going to offer some thoughts on libertarianism. I'm not a member of the Libertarian Party. I don't want to be a member of the Libertarian Party, but I find that libertarians are really the only ones advocating for liberty. And in Libertarianism, the book, David Boas says that, and I'm paraphrasing, basically he cites the fact that millions of Americans of all ages are rediscovering libertarianism, which is a visionary alternative to the tired party orthodoxies of left and right. I think it's definitely a alternative to two forms of progressivism. 52% of the American people, according to Gallup in 1995, believe that the federal government has become so large and powerful it poses an immediate threat to the rights and freedoms of ordinary citizens. You know, it's now 20 years later, and I think that statement is even more true than it was in 1995. Libertarians, you know, have ideas about liberty under law and economic progress. Their ideas, they believe, make it especially suited for the dynamic new era that we are supposedly now entering, an era, you know, the fourth industrial revolution, the technology revolution, whatever you want to call it. In our country, the United States, the bureaucratic Leviathan, according to Boas, is newly threatened by the resurgence of the libertarian ideas upon which the country is founded. I don't agree. I don't think that the Leviathan is threatened at all. He says we are witnessing a breakdown of all the cherished beliefs of the welfare and warfare state. Americans have seen the failure of big government. Libertarianism seeks to uphold liberty, maximize political freedom, and autonomy. And I think autonomy is a really important word. What is autonomy? Well, let's relate it to the workplace. In your workplace, can you do what you want? I am in business for myself, and I love my autonomy because I get to decide when I'm going to do a podcast, what I'm going to talk about, where I'm going to go today, or I can just take a nap. So I have complete autonomy over my workflow and what I do most of the time. The emphasis is on freedom of choice, voluntary association, and individual judgment with this libertarian idea. Now, if you're skeptical of authority and state power and believe we have to have a conversation about the legitimacy of social institutions and restricting the power of the state and social institutions, well, then you lead to the liberty side. Now, I'm not telling you that you're a libertarian. I'm not advocating for libertarians. I'm just saying that this point of view is not represented in a Republican Party pushing for religious conservatives, increasing the federal debt, and adding to the price of goods to the average American's daily, monthly purchases with minimum wages and trade deals, taxes on imports called tariffs, and all sorts of regulations, and increasing the power of the executive branch to control things through executive orders. That is not a liberty concept, and that is not actually a rational progressive concept. Where are the original Enlightenment Republicans? Well, they don't exist anymore because this original progressivism is the antidote for radical progressivism. And what we're fighting is radical progressivism. So what we are doing is we are fighting for Team Red even when it votes to build a stadium for billionaires or a president who believes that he creates jobs or he fixes the economy or he is responsible for the economy or the markets. Meanwhile, we have pollsters doing great disservice to the American people by asking people if they think we're going to have a civil war. Well, why would you even ask that? And why would you say that? Because conservative progressives would be fighting the moderate progressives. So there's not going to be any civil war because you have two sides of the same coin fighting each other. So there's no friction there because both really want the same thing. Democrats as radical progressives would be fighting Republicans who are moderate radical progressives, because they're really not about reform. They're certainly not about the exchange of ideas. They are for a different – they both want to use the government to achieve their ideals. So draining the swamp is nothing more than Tippecanoe and Tyler II. It's a campaign slogan. We're draining the swamp, right? $1 trillion of new debt this year already, adding to the personnel in Homeland Security, the Defense Department, and the Pentagon, on and on and on. The solution, we're going to be told, is, well, we have to have Democrats take over this country and impeach this president because he's a bad person, and we can't nominate this Supreme Court candidate. Forget his opinions on enhanced interrogation or surveillance or the power of the executive. He went to a party when he was 17 years old and got drunk, so we can't have this guy as a Supreme Court justice. You know, we're not talking about the real issues. The solution they're going to tell us is, Democrats are really better at running this country better because they're more competent at running this vast state apparatus. They will not dismantle it. On the other hand, Republicans have not dismantled Obamacare. In fact, a so-called conservative chief justice parsed words to say the ACA was in fact constitutional after so many Republicans shouted it wasn't, because the Supreme Court was not going to reverse a entitlement voted by Congress into law. Republicans have voted to spend more. They did not reform the tax code. They amended the Tax Reform Act signed into law during the Reagan administration. Now, let me tell you why I don't like the tax reform thing that the Republicans claim they fixed it. The corporate tax went from 35 to 25% right now, something like that, 35 to 20%, whatever it is, which is great. We'll take it. But why, if a tax reduction of 10% is good, why not make it zero? Why, if it's good to go from 35 to 25, if it's good to go from 75 to 35, why not just not have a corporate tax? Because if we didn't, we would not collect enough tax to, quote unquote, run the government. This administration and its supporters in Congress, and by the way, you can listen to this podcast in 5 years, and this administration applies to whatever administration is in power, unless they actually start dismantling the state and state power. This administration and its supporters in Congress have Republicans convinced. Republican economics in the form of a tax cut or higher tariffs for goods brought in from Mexico and Canada are conservative economics, and whatever conservative economics are, it is a meaningless term. They believe a bigger economy will bring in more money to the Treasury through taxation and cite the quote-unquote Laffer curve. Well, the Laffer curve is based on cutting taxes and spending. Republicans are actually practicing Keynesian economics, the idea of quote-unquote priming the pump through deficit spending. Actually, Keynes believed, the economist, that you save money during the good times to spend to quote-unquote prime the pump in bad times. We don't do that anymore. We borrow the money during times, and then we tell people that deficits don't matter. It's Republicans telling people when they're borrowing the money, deficits don't matter. As soon as they're out of power, then it's those bad Democrats and their crazy radical progressive ideas that are spending all of our money. Not supply-side economics. That is not what they are practicing, because supply-side economics requires you cut spending first, then you cut taxes, you rinse and repeat. So FDR would be proud of the Republicans. And Obama actually should be supporting the Republicans, because they are doing the same thing he did. They passed a stimulus package that spends $1 trillion in debt, and they call it a tax cut. He went into debt $1 trillion to have the stimulus package to spend on roads and bridges and programs, you know, shovel-ready projects. And the excuse was, it's going to create so much business and grow the economy, we're not going to worry about the deficit. The Republicans say exactly the same thing. We're going to spend on defense, and it's going to create so much growth that we're going to say, you know, take in so many taxes that we don't have to worry about the deficits. And then when the deficits become a problem, they say, well, you know, it's actually a good thing because people can buy, bonds, and the dollar is the world's reserve currency, and we shouldn't worry about debt because Every businessman knows debt is a good thing because that's how you build businesses. It's insane because none of it is, basically it ends up this way. You are stuck voting for Team Red or Team Blue. If you like Team Blue, it's because you believe that they're going to fix all the problems in the world. And if we just give people minimum incomes, if we just give people more welfare, if we just give, we have more public-private partnerships, and if we have single-payer health and it's, adjudicated by the insurance companies and everything else, all will be well. Team Red says we have to keep these Muslims out and we need to have our army all over the world stopping things from happening and we got to be safe and everything else. And Team Red gets us to the government controlling the means of production, the people, faster than the radical progressives in the Democratic Party. Adding power to the government for whatever reason adds to a concentration of power, more entropy, more disorder, and eventually the takeover of the government by so-called strong men to solve all the problems created by the government. Those are the seeds of fascism. And now that people know what that actually is, now that people actually know what fascism is, you'll hear a lot of Republicans, accusing radical progressives with sowing the seeds of real fascism, that Trump isn't a fascist, and on and on and on. The truth is they're both creating the conditions that will produce fascistic, leadership in this country, not dissimilar to Argentina or Brazil in the 1950s. Military juntas or, the Perones, our own American version of the two. And we will then be a banana republic if we're not already. To me, the current administration represents more than anything incompetence, and the previous administration represented more than anything incompetence. And if you say, but I am religious and I believe that conservatives are, we need to have people that are going to appoint judges that aren't going to allow all this abortion. Well, you're being hoodwinked. And you really have no choice because, A, I would be surprised if Roe v. Wade is turned over simply because if you actually read the ruling, you'll see that it's tied into so many elements of the Bill of Rights, you would have to turn over the Bill of Rights. And I'm not saying I support it or don't support it, but maybe that's what they really want to do. The American people have no time or stomach for complex questions like how do you limit the power of the state, create real liberty, and the question of how much government exists and how much government do you need exactly? And people say, you're just one of those anti-government guys. I'm not against government. I don't think it's right that the largest employer in the state of Minnesota is the Mayo Clinic and gets $4 billion a year from the government. I am for zero basing government and government spending every year and returning to the taxpayer the money not spent, meaning every department of the government should sunset every 2 years and be rebuilt based on what is necessary. When a new Congress comes into power, when a new president comes into power, the government offices should be emptied and all of the people released. And maybe they'll be rehired and maybe they won't, depending on what is happening. And what happens, though, is we have something called government continuity, and it goes on and on and on. What is happening is they are showing us how deeply enmeshed in folly they actually are, Republican or Democrat. Now, I'm not telling you not to vote Republican because people are going to go out and they're going to vote for their team. Good for you. Have a good time voting. And, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, as this, ridiculous show continues, what they are actually doing is making themselves irrelevant. I know people, I have good friends on either side of the political spectrum. They all are disgusted by what they see in Washington day after day after day after day. If you go and you spend any time looking into these districts where there's toss-up races and you watch the ads, they have nothing to do with any issue that's important to anyone. It's all nonsense. So what they're doing essentially is making themselves irrelevant, and they're making themselves ripe for disruption. And when I say disruption, I look at government and I say to myself, how many services can be provided that the government either regulates and controls through regulation, subsidizes, or provides? How many services can be provided, whether it's in medical care or any of the things that supposedly the government provides that we have to deal with? Schools, even roads, things of that nature. Say, you can't. Well, how are you going to build roads? And what are you going to do when who are you going to call when you have to call the fire department or the police department? Well, You know, does that mean we're not allowed to discuss the idea of having a private police department, or, you know, a private fire department, or, you know, private medical care, or any of those, private education, and you know, getting the price down enough by not regulating it, or even just having that conversation? Again, Republicans used to say, let's have an exchange of ideas. And Democrats used to say, let's have an exchange of ideas. Today, they are both hell-bent for leather to basically increase the power of government. And that is our real problem. It isn't Brett Kavanaugh and drinking beer on the weekends back in the day. It isn't Trump and his, you know, tweets. It isn't Trump is a fascist. It isn't Trump's a bad person because he, you know, grabs women. Any of that stuff. It is they are putting on a show while they increase the power of government. And the problems are not going to be solved by a Republican Congress or a Democrat Congress, because they're both going to hell in the same boat. One more time, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Have your heating and your water heater at least checked. Have the pipes checked. This is the stuff that goes catastrophic when it gets cold in Minnesota, and you know it will. We're at a solar minimum. We're going to have a cold winter. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Four generations in Frogtown, metro-wide from St. Paul. Ryan Plumbing at ryanplumbing.com. All right. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast. On Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, the new Google Podcast app. I appreciate the likes and the shares and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, as you know. Also appreciate donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 762.
I never read it in a book. I never saw it on a show. Soul.